Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is November 12, 2017, and this is episode 147. News. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're catching up on a bevy of news. All of y'all out there in internet radio land probably are already familiar with some of the scheduling issues we have had in the last few months. I'm happy to say that I do not anticipate these concerns being a further roadblock to future productivity. So, we are back, we are better than ever, and we are looking forward to talking to all y'all out there in internet radio land about all of your favorite left-of-center news and views that you've come to expect from us. With all of that having been said, we have a big show roll to go through tonight. So, in the interest of our time and yours, let's get started. Slaggy, do you want to get us kicked off on our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits?
Yes. Breath of the Wild has received a version 1.3.3 update. The most notable addition in this update is the Xenoblade Chronicles 2 side quest and collaboration equipment. If you complete the Xenoblade Chronicles 2 collaboration quest, you can get gear that looks like Rex's from Xenoblade 2, which has some very Thunder Thigh looking pants.
Yeah, I'm actually super into this. I have not done the quest yet, but I saw some people on my Twitter timeline, I guess, have already done it. I think it's a really cool looking costume, even if those thighs do make Link look a little bit thick.
Nothing wrong with that.
Hey. We also have word here of a collaboration mission in the upcoming 3DS title, Attack on Titan 2 Future Coordinates. This is going to be a new level featuring a giant Monokuma from Danganronpa. So I have to ask, Slaggy, how does this make you feel about Attack on Titan 2 Future Coordinates?
I mean, the Titans are already creepy enough, so if Monokuma is involved, it's going to probably be pretty disturbing.
Excellent. I am looking forward to this game, which will be releasing in Japan on November 30th. The first game did get a Western release. I expect this one will as well.
We recently had a Xenoblade Chronicles 2 at Nintendo Direct, and in addition to the Breath of the Wild mission that we had just talked about, our quest, we also have information about what the expansion pass for Xenoblade Chronicles 2 will be adding. On December 1st, there will be a free voice acting pack that will allow you to choose between English and Japanese voices.
Yes.
And then in December, there will be support items for your journey.
Cool.
In January, new items for the main game. On some point in spring, a new rare blade.
Ooh.
Summer, a new challenge battle mode. And in autumn, a brand new story and adventure.
Yes.
So I think it's pretty cool that you know, Nintendo's really come a long way in terms of their DLC and how they roll it out. I think they've done pretty well with it, so...
Yeah, I have to say, I'm a big fan of the way that Nintendo approaches DLC. I kind of like the idea of these as more like mini expansions, almost, where, you know, typically at the end of these DLC expansion passes, we saw this with Mario versus Rabbids, or Mario and Rabbids, I'm sorry, we saw this with Breath of the Wild, where it's like, okay, you're gonna get some smaller additions, and then at the end, it's going to be like a whole new like story content. I'm into that. I think that's a cool approach. I'm definitely looking forward to Xenoblade Chronicles 2, and I will probably buy the DLC.
Yeah.
What about you, Slaggy?
Most likely. I mean, it makes me think of like some of the better things from like Assassin's Creed 2 had some of those like Michelangelo missions where you got to take out the flying machine and stuff. But actually, you know, it offered something new instead of just being like, get more guns.
Excellent. We also have word here that the Taiwanese horror cult classic, I'm sorry, modern cult classic, Detention, is getting a Switch port. This is, of course, courtesy of Red Candle Games. I'm very excited about this. I watched a friend of mine play some of this during Extra Life a few weeks ago, and I was really interested in playing through this because I've heard a lot about it from, you know, again, it's a diehard fan base, and I haven't played it yet. So having the opportunity to play it on the Switch will be fantastic.
Indeed. Last month, Nintendo Switch got a version 4.0.0 system update, adding some different features, including the ability to capture video, and you can capture up to a maximum of the previous 30 seconds if you hold the capture button during gameplay. It is currently compatible with Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, ARMS, and Splatoon 2. And also Super Mario Odyssey, which released since that patch came out. There are new icons from Odyssey and Breath of the Wild.
Oh, for the user icons.
Indeed.
And
you
one
can
of
also
the...
transfer user and save data to another system, which was a big sticking point for a lot of people.
Yeah, I definitely think that that was a very good upgrade for them to do.
Yeah, I mean, our friend Extrafer from the currently on hiatus guys on a show, had some Switch drama, and the ability to transfer would have helped a lot.
What a nightmare.
You can also pre-purchase games on the eShop, and...
Yeah, I think a lot of us did that for Mario Odyssey, in fact. So, all right, we also got pretty big news this weekend. This is the third fighter pack to the Injustice 2 release, which is available this week on PC and already available on the Xbox and PlayStation platforms. The next DLC fighter pack, this is Fighter Pack 3, is going to feature DC favorites The Atom and Enchantress, as well as guest characters the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Cool.
I'm really excited about this. I like Injustice 2 a fair bit. I actually thought it turned out to be a really great game. I've liked the previously announced DLC, like Hellboy and stuff is a guest character in the game, which I think is really neat. Just all in all, I think that this whole two new characters and a guest character is a really good path for Injustice 2. And I hope we keep seeing this kind of content because I think people are going to keep buying it. Well, what do you think, Slaggy?
Yeah, I think it's a little more fitting than adding Freddy Krueger to Mortal Kombat X.
How dare you?
Now, are all the Ninja Turtles just counting as one character, but you can choose their outfit? Is that how they're rolling this out?
You know, I don't actually know how that works yet. I think that's a question a lot of us still have right now. This was only just an
characters.
This was just announced a few days ago, and we don't really have a whole lot of detail on it yet because it was the trailer for this was actually debuted at a tournament that happened just this past Friday night.
Oh.
So I expect we will have more information on how this is going to work once the new week news cycle starts on Monday. Unfortunately, we're recording this on Sunday, so we don't have that luxury.
So it turns out Rockstar made an interesting minor, but for some people, much welcome change in L.A. Noire. And this is that, in L.A. Noire, you originally could choose truth, doubt, or lie. And now this... for the upcoming remaster, which is also becoming out for the Switch, it is Good Cop, Bad Cop, and Accuse, which a lot of people felt that the truth, doubt, and lie choices resulted in choices that they didn't feel like their character would have made if they had realized what it would have resulted in. I can't speak to that personally, but...
Yeah, I actually played this game, and I do totally get it. The whole idea between truth, doubt, and lie is that you're basically supposed to be choosing if you... how you want your character to act. Like, does your character believe that they're telling the truth? Does your character doubt this? It's like, do you think that this person is lying to you? So oftentimes when you were picking that your character doubted what they were being told, your character would go off into a fit of rage about it. And good cop.
I don't think you're being completely honest with me.
Yeah, it's like, right?
You fucking liar.
No, but that's basically it. So this probably will work better for the game. It's a little bit unfortunate, because even truth, doubt, and lie themselves had already been tweaked previously. So it's a little bit frustrating, I guess, that, the game has had to be changed and have its UI tweaked several times now, because I guess the original design intention still hasn't come through right. So either way, I'll probably check this game out again when it comes back out. It's just, there is a part of me that's like, maybe y'all should have made more changes than just some UI changes if people are getting this frustrated. I don't know. We also have word here of a new character in Overwatch. This is Moira, and she is going to be a support healer. Something that's really cool about this character, in addition to the fact that she is like sort of a glam rock David Bowie type cyborg character, which is pretty badass on its own, is that she actually mixes pretty active DPS and healing utilities. One of her abilities is like a long range damage. The other one is like a shorter range heal. And in order to do both of them, you kind of have to keep a balance of equally doing both to keep your resource meter full, which should
sounds
be
very World of Warcraft, honestly.
Yeah, well, it should be a really fun and kind of interesting dynamic. I think very similar to what a lot of us had in mind for monk healing in World of Warcraft, where, you know, the expectation was really that you're going to have to evenly balance your DPS and your heals.
And then they threw that model out the window.
Right. Either way, I'm super stoked for Moira. I'm definitely going to play with her as soon as she's on the live servers.
Yeah,
she is already on the test realms, so I think that the full release of this character will be coming pretty quick.
Yeah, and I will totally buy the Glamrock skin. Like, I will buy that with real money.
That's not how Overwatch works, but you can buy it with in-game currency.
But can't you buy the in-game currency and then spend that currency on outfits you want?
I would have to look. I thought you could only buy loot boxes and then get currency from loot boxes if you got it.
Oh. Well, speaking of World of Warcraft, at the recent BlizzCon 2017, the new expansion pack has been announced. This is World of Warcraft Battle for Azeroth. It's kind of taking it back to the heart of the series and going
on
Horde versus Alliance.
So interesting.
It will raise the level cap from 110 to 120, as expected. Some kind of interesting things is that the leveling experience apparently will be completely separate. If you're Horde, you'll go to Zandalar and hang out with the trolls. And if you are Alliance, you'll go to Kul Tiras and hang with Jaina. Because, yeah, she's been really a lot of fun the past couple of years. They're also adding allied races, which are kind of like, they're not, I can't even really say that they're new skins, because it's like High Mountain Tauren, Void Elves, Dark Iron Dwarves, but they actually have different racial abilities, so that's pretty cool. I mean, I know a lot of people have wanted specifically like Dark Iron Dwarves and such for a while, so you'll be able to unlock those once you've allied those races, apparently. They have things called War Fronts, which is going to kind of change the way that world PvP works, from what I understand, because they're actually getting rid of PvP servers. Like, basically, you'll just be able to toggle PvP on or off as you wish. And if you go out in the world with PvP on, you'll get, like, some bonuses.
Well, and part of the Warfronts thing is that they're, like, 20-player cooperative events that are meant to be inspired by, like, classic Warcraft, like, real-time strategy games. So they're supposed to be a little more thoughtful than, I think, what a lot of us think about when we think of PvP-type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But these are also supposed to have PvE elements, so I'm really excited about that, because it won't just be a PvP thing.
Yeah, wasn't there, for one of the expansions leading up to it, there was, like, the Battle for South Shore? Something like that.
Uh-huh.
So that's why I'm curious if it's going to be like that. And then there's going to be a legendary neck piece that kind of is, like, the new, what are they, not ultimate weapon, you know.
Artifact weapon?
Artifact weapon sort of thing.
So yeah.
It's cool. I mean, I'll definitely go check it out, play through a character 120, but, I mean, you know, the way that I am with World of Warcraft these days is I pretty much come back for the expansion, play through the story, and then don't really touch it much for the rest of the expansion cycle, so we'll see.
Yeah, I'll pop back in. I'll pick the expansion back up. I do for every expansion. I'll play it, and I'm sure I'll love it, and after a point, no one I know will play it anymore, and I'll drop out of it. I'm just so tired of Horde versus Alliance. I feel like we get one of these Horde versus Alliance focused expansions every other expansion, and then we have to team up across faction lines to face a greater evil, and then the next expansion we're at each other's necks again. I'm just so tired of that cyclical nature of that. Like, I feel like there are so many more storytelling opportunities that they could be following, and this is just not that interesting to me.
Well, I mean, especially after spending so much time with Final Fantasy 14 and seeing how, you know, like, they don't have factions in that sense. You know, all of your player characters are, you know, on the side of the heroes, so I mean, it's just a kind of a tired trope at this point. I agree.
Yeah, it's just that's exactly it. It just feels outdated. It feels archaic. I don't really see, from like a gameplay perspective or game design perspective, the need for it. But it is what it is. I'll still jump in. I'll still have a super fun time. So it's whatever.
Yeah. And speaking of outdated and archaic, there's also been the announcement of World of Warcraft Classic. This is basically a legacy server. We don't really know any other details about this yet. If it's just going to be a single server, or if it's going to be multiple servers, or like a different different client. I'm not too sure because I'm only just familiar with, you know, this, that this has been announced. And so this
will
be...
and so they've actually announced very little, and they've even given us conflicting pieces of information and comments on whether or not this will even actually truly be like vanilla World of Warcraft, or if it's going to be some sort of new version of just vanilla content. Because they've indicated that basically, you know, they're still working out the bugs in their plan, so to speak, but that they do want it to be a Blizzard-quality modern experience while still being the classic WoW. And so a lot of us are kind of left wondering, like, what that really means.
Cool, I can't wait to level my unarmed skill up again.
Well, right, and again, the kinds of comments that they've been making have made a lot of us think that, like, maybe it's going to be pretty heavily tweaked, in which case they're kind of missing the point of what people want about Classic's legacy servers.
Yeah, spending, like, what, 10,000 gold for your epic mount?
Back when, you know, gold took a long time to grind up, you could play for a real long time and only have a handful of gold.
I mean, I wonder if they just mean things like system changes, like, oh, you can queue up in Dungeon Finder rather than try to form a group.
Yeah, but even that, a lot of the vanilla server-type folks, or Classic server-type folks, really dislike Dungeon Fire. They do not want Dungeon Finder. Like, the big part of the appeal of those kinds of legacy servers for a lot of players is the sense of a community, and having your reputation mean something, and if you have no friends, then you just can't do content, so you have to sort of work to make social connections, and in order to even see something like Deadmines. The first time I ran a character through Deadmines, dude, I was overleveled for it, but I had never run a single instance because I had not been playing with other people for the first 20 levels of my first character.
Wow.
Which, by the way, back then, getting through 20 levels took weeks. So, yeah, no, it was not... It was a completely different game. It wasn't a game that I would probably want to ever go back to myself.
Yeah.
For people that would, I think that's great and good on you, and I hope this product meets your needs.
I'm like, I remember when I started playing, we were three-manning Deadmines with me healing Spect as a balance druid. Like, I wasn't even Spect in the Restoration, so... Yeah, I clearly started playing at a very different time.
We also have word here, another piece of new Overwatch news. The next Overwatch map is Blizzard World.
So
which
cute!
Which is a theme park-style tribute to all of the games of Blizzard. One of the particularly cute details that I'm looking at in a photo right now...
Snacks Rammus.
...is a snack shop in the... theme park called Snacks Rammus. Thank you for stealing that from me, Slackkick. That was super cool of you. So, this just looks like a really cute map. It's apparently going to be released early next year. People at BlizzCon have already gotten a play on it, which makes me hate them a lot, but it just looks so cute. I really can't wait. Yeah, what do you think, Slaggy?
I think a Blizzard theme park, at least for theme park nerds like us, I mean, I include you on that, because I believe you are. This is something we've always wanted, so, you know, in the IRL, so in Overwatch, I mean, it'll be, you know, one step closer. It also makes me wonder slash probably pretty certain that people have put things on Steam Workshop that are like WoW inspired for Planet Coaster, so that you could actually make like a little Blizzard World theme park.
Yes.
And Planet Coaster just added, added a scenario editor. I know that's not on our news, but now we can make a Game Buoy park for people to play.
Cute.
StarCraft 2 is going free to play. That'll be happening this week.
That's great. Yeah, if you don't have StarCraft 2 already, you'll be able to download the Wings of Liberty campaign for free and get access to both the single and multiplayer modes of the game. If you already have Wings, you'll get a free copy of the game's first expansion, Heart of the Swarm. But you will still have to buy Heart of the Swarm if you don't already have Wings. That's just sort of their, I guess, amnesty gift for those of us who shelled out money for StarCraft 2 already.
Yeah, I got it during one of their holiday sales. Super cheap, so I guess I'll be getting Heart of the Swarm for free.
That's awesome.
And I mean, this will be great for anyone who wanted to check out that World of StarCraft or whatever that add-on was. Like, I've always meant to go try that out, just out of curiosity, but never got around to it. Maybe this is the time. We have the announcement from Bandai Namco of a FighterZ pass for Dragon Ball FighterZ. This will have 8 new characters and, like, all of the things that go with them, like stamps, avatars, alternate costumes, etc. this will cost $34.99, so it'll be exciting to see who those fighters are.
Excellent. And moving on to our release date updates, that gives me the perfect segue, because Dragon Ball FighterZ will be releasing in North America and Europe on January 26th, 2018. We also have word here that Battle Chef Brigade will be releasing on the Nintendo Switch and Steam on November 20th. Final Fantasy XV's online multiplayer mode Comrades will be launching on November 15th. That's this week. And Final Fantasy XV episode Ignis will be releasing on December 13th.
Yes.
Style Savvy Styling Star will come to North America on December 25th, 2017.
Is it for 3DS?
Yes, it is.
Oh, why is it not on the Switch?
World of Final Fantasy will be releasing on PC on November 28th. Shadow of the Colossus Remake will be releasing on February 6th, 2018.
Oh, it's not going to take like 10 years?
LocoRoco 2 Remastered will be releasing on PS4 on December 9th. Sword Art Online Fatal Bullet will be releasing on February 23rd, 2018 in North America and Europe, about 2 weeks after its Japanese debut. Metal Gear Survive will be releasing in North America on February 20th and Europe on February 22nd. Digimon Story Cyber Sleuth Hacker's Memory will be releasing in North America on January 19th, 2018, as well as in Europe on that same day. One Piece Pirate Warriors 3 Deluxe Edition will be releasing on the Nintendo Switch in Japan on December 21st. I haven't yet heard anything about a Western release, but as the original release of this game was very successful Western territories, I would be very shocked if it didn't come out here as well. Super Beat Zonic will be releasing on Switch on November 21st in North America and November 30th in Europe. The Monster Hunter World beta will be launching on December 9th. And last but not least, Destiny 2's first expansion, The Curse of Osiris, will be releasing on December 5th.
Wow. Wow, that's soon.
Yeah, very exciting stuff there. Cannot wait to dip my toes into that Destiny 2 expansion. I'll definitely be picking up Dragon Ball FighterZ. Goes without saying, I'll check out some of this Final Fantasy 15 DLC. Was there anything there that interested you, Slaggy?
Yeah, probably Bits and Pieces, which is, you know, the new title from Konami, Bits and Pieces. I was trying to make a joke. It didn't land.
Yeah, I didn't quite get it, but thanks for trying.
So you forgot about a very blockbuster, I would dare say, Game of the Year contender that just came out.
Did I?
Sonic Forces. So apparently Sonic Forces is really bad.
Yeah, but it's already out, so why would we talk about its release date?
To make fun of it.
Fair. All right, well, let's talk about some news.
News. News. News. Oh my god, news.
First up here, we have a very exciting news story. Shin Megami Tensei 5 has been announced for the Nintendo Switch as an exclusive title. This is, of course, a big deal. The Shin Megami Tensei series is a storied and much-loved franchise. Of course, Shin Megami Tensei 4 was a very popular title on the 3DS a few years back. Have you seen this announcement, Saigi? What did you think?
Yeah, I think it's great that they're making the jump to Switch. I wasn't super shocked because, I mean, pretty much anything that hasn't been Persona has been on 3DS or DS at this point. Like, you know, a lot of the Digital Devil Sagas and those sorts of things have all been, like, 3DS and DS games, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, there's a lot of Shin Megami Tensei stuff out there. I didn't really connect with 4 super deeply because, you know, my experience with Shin Megami Tensei is mostly Persona, which, you know, has its own flavors to it. So, you know, I'll still definitely look into SMT5. You know, maybe it'll click for me, but I'm also holding out for more Tokyo Mirage Sessions.
Excellent. I think that is a good life choice. We also have word that Hamster has gotten the licensed rights in their Arcade Archives line
for your butt
to start releasing titles by IREM. This is, of course, very, very exciting. IREM is one of those, like, cult classic studios that I think a lot of us have a lot of love for. The first game that they're going to be releasing for the PS4 and Nintendo Switch for download as Arcade Archives titles will be Zippy Race, which was also released in North America and Europe as Moto Race USA or Traverse USA.
Zippy Race is what I call it when I'm trying to get intimate with someone and you're trying to quickly get out of your clothes.
Zippy Race. Race currently has a 2017 release window, and Hamster has confirmed that they will be releasing the R-Type titles beginning in 2018. Please look forward to it.
We have some interesting news coming out of the creators of PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, which, you know, was a pretty big hit. So this is called Ascent Infinite Realm. It's a high fantasy steampunk MMORPG being published by Kakao Games. It seems really cool, and, you know, I haven't played PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, but, you know, I've watched a lot of it on Twitch, and, you know, like, I know the guy who, I guess, PlayerUnknown, that's him, like, he said things standing up against, like, bad people, so, like, I automatically like him a little more than I would have already, but, that being said, I just think it's really cool that their next project is so different from PlayerUnknown's Battleground.
Yeah, and I'll say, you know, this is one of those things where, like, it seems too good to be true. MMOs obviously take a phenomenal amount of resources, and this game already looks super clean and really well put together. So it almost seems, like, too good to be true, but I don't know. I'm definitely interested if the game releases like this. Like, I'll definitely check it out.
The beta is supposed to start early next year. I was almost wondering if this has been, like, his lifelong... I don't really know much about him, like, how old he is or, like, what his history is, but I almost wonder if, like, this has been a project that he's been, like, developing, like, and imagining this world or whatever, like, for a long time, and that PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds was maybe, like, his first, you know, dalliance into designing games or whatever. Like I said, I really don't know too much about it.
All right, well, we will definitely keep you posted on this one. We also have word that EA is set to acquire Respawn Entertainment. This is, of course, a big deal because obviously we know that Respawn is responsible for the well-loved Electronic Arts IP Titanfall, as well as a game that's in the Star Wars universe that they're currently working on and have previously announced. There's sort of been some rumors that I guess some other companies were attempting to buy Respawn outright, and EA, as a part of their publishing partnership for Titanfall and the upcoming Star Wars game, had first right of refusal, or I'm sorry, right of first refusal, in the case of a potential buyout of Respawn. So it looks like EA has exercised that option. They will be paying in both cash and long-term equity literally hundreds of millions of dollars for the studio. But, you know, I'm a big fan of Titanfall. I know some of our listeners are as well. This, to me, seems like only a good thing as long as Respawn can keep knocking out the hits. Yeah. If they can't, well, we have seen what EA does to studios, as I stink eye them.
We have a delightful little announcement in the form of the Penguin Wars remake that was exclusively in Japan for Switch prior to this announcement is coming to the West early next year. This is a remake of the Strange little Famicom game where you have to basically be penguins having wars. It's really brutal. I mean, there's like, you know, I heard that it's probably one of the most realistic portrayals of war, even more than like Call of Duty, you know?
Yeah, I don't think that's true, but this game does look adorable and I look forward to playing it.
No, yeah, Penguin Wars has always looked like a very cute, strange little game, and that's cool that, you know, with the Switch's success, that they're like, cool, let's bring it over.
We also have word here that the recently released Dragon Quest take on the collectible card battle RPG genre, similar to games like Hearthstone and Shadowverse, which has only been released on mobile phones in Japan, has already surpassed 7 million downloads. This is, of course, Dragon Quest Rivals. It's very similar to those two aforementioned collectible card games. Free to play, you take control of one of the Dragon Quest style heroes, Terry or Jessica, and fight using decks made of the iconic Dragon Quest franchise monsters. There will be a standard pack of tickets given away for free to commemorate the 7 million downloaded milestone for players who log in between November 7th and 14th. Square Enix has yet to make an announcement to bring this game outside of Japan, but I really, really, really hope they do. Even if only 10,000 of us would play, there's got to be a way to make us profitable, right? It's a free-to-play game.
Yeah. We have word from Square Enix producer Yosuke Saito that the setting and a scenario planner are already in place for a new Nier game. Well, we don't necessarily know if it's a new game necessarily, but Silicon Era describes it as a new Nier development. it, so.
Excellent. And we do know that Yoko Taro is also involved, so it's definitely going to be something worth our time. Who knows what it'll be exactly, but it'll be worth our time.
He'll wear that silly mask and, you know.
Oh, the Emil mask?
Yes, that's actually just his real face.
We also got the announcement of the new Sucker Punch IP. Sucker Punch, of course, being the developer best known for the Infamous series. This is a samurai action open-world adventure game called Ghosts of Tsushima. This was announced during the PlayStation Media Showcase at Paris Games Week 2017. I think the game looks really fantastic. I'm definitely super excited to see more about this game. What do you think, Slaggy?
Yeah, I mean, the Infamous games were pretty solid. I never, I wouldn't say that they were, you know, necessarily my favorites, that I never really put the time in to finish any of them. But, you know, there were a lot of great concepts there. So I'm really excited to see what Sucker Punch is going to do.
Excellent. We also got the announcement of Spelunky 2. This is the sequel to the well-loved exploration platformer Spelunky. It was also announced at the Paris Games Week 2017, and fingers crossed that it will get a Switch port at some point.
Well, you just spelunked right into that one, so I'm going to melee my way into this one before you get to it. This is Guacamelee 2, which is coming soonish to PlayStation 4. Soonish is apparently in the words of Drinkbox Studios.
Excellent. Fingers crossed that we're playing it quick.
Fingers crossed that it will come to Switch.
I love Guacamelee. Cannot wait. We also got word that Inazuma 11 Ares will be releasing on the PS4, Switch, and smartphones in Japan this summer. That is, of course, the summer of 2018, not the summer that has already passed. Either way, super excited about this. The Inazuma 11 games are always a ton of fun, and I expect this one to be no different.
Yeah. Next piece of news is kind of crazy. It is the announcement of a new title from Niantic, who you probably know best from Pokemon Go, but also Ingress. This is Harry Potter Wizards Unite. All we know is that basically you will be going around in an augmented reality fashion like the other games they've done. Going on adventures, learning and casting spells, discover mysterious artifacts, and encounter legendary beasts and iconic characters. You'll also team up with others to take down powerful enemies. All I have to say is, it's Leviosa, not Leviosa.
Yeah, I wish I were more excited about this. I'm a little bit of a Potter nerd, but honestly, Ingress and Pokemon Go are both kind of all I need for this. And honestly, Pokemon Go only works like half the time for me even still. So
yeah,
I'm just, I don't know. The proof will be in the pudding. If they deliver a solid product, I'll get pulled into it. But I'm skeptical at the moment.
Well, and it's going to be interesting. Like, I'm curious if it will have an option to link to your Pottermore account or something. Because I imagine with J.K. Rowling on board that it would not use a sorting mechanic that would be drastically different, but like I'm just saying, like if it doesn't link to my Pottermore or whatever and it does not place me in Hufflepuff, I'd have an identity crisis. Like I mean, I know that bragging about being Hufflepuff is probably not something that people are used to, but like I've come to accept that I am a, you know, I'm a Hufflepuff through and through, and if I'm not a Hufflepuff, then I'm not gonna go with it. Wow.
Last
no,
but not least,
no response.
Last but not least.
Okay, Gryffindor.
Metal Max Xeno. The latest. Look, if I can't say anything nice, I'm not going to say anything at all.
That's because you Gryffindors can be a bunch of arrogant prats sometimes.
Metal Max Xeno, the latest entry in the cult favorite Metal Max series, has been announced for a spring release in Japan for PS Vita and PlayStation 4. No word has yet come across about an international release, but we will be keeping our fingers crossed.
Interesting.
All right, we also have some news stories in our Culture Club here today. Culture Club, of course, is where we look at some stories in the greater gaming world, maybe not specifically related to games themselves, but as you probably guessed from the name, a little more important to gamer culture.
You know,
Slaggy,
do
you want to
go.
Take this first one?
We have the very recent release as of Thursday night or Thursday at some point.
Thursday morning.
Oh, was it Thursday morning? Okay. I guess that makes more sense. I just didn't update it until Thursday night. It's Hulu on Switch. Unfortunately, Hulu kind of sucks now. Like, the way they change their models or whatever, like, you have to pay more for less ads, or I don't know. But, hey, Hulu. And actually, Hulu's the only place to get 30 Rock at this point, so, you know, still worth worth it. And good to see, you know, the groundwork being laid for things like Netflix.
Yeah, you know, I actually watch a lot of Hulu. It's basically where I watch all of my, like, current shows. So
yeah, I'm just mad because The Good Place is on mid-season hiatus.
Yeah, stupid football. But, you know, I'm super excited because, I don't know, I use Hulu and I take my Switch with me everywhere. So if I can connect to Wi-Fi, I can watch some TV. I'm down. Could already do it on my phone, but eh.
Switch is better.
Right? Like, so, I also don't need my Switch to keep battery life for the sake of being able to reach out in case of an emergency. That's why I hate doing things on my phone in public, especially now my phone is, you know, it's an iPhone. It's about 2 years old, so the battery life is terrible now.
It's like, upgrade to an X.
Well, I haven't even done the most recent software upgrade because my battery life is already so bad. Ooh. And I'm terrified it will get so much worse.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, I at this point don't want to watch videos on my phone because the battery is already so bad, so I'll watch videos on my Switch.
So before you take this next one, I have a story for our listeners. Remember when we were at Best Buy like a week ago and I was like, oh wow, there's still day one editions of East 8 Lacrimosa of Dana?
Yes,
now I understand why.
Yeah, so the translation of East 8 Lacrimosa of Dana was pretty poorly done. Basically, the NIS America rep, actually specifically their president, released a statement throwing their new editor under the bus, basically.
Ooh.
Their new translator and editor. So basically, you know, they had some new staff take care of this. The actual translation was so bad that a lot of people thought it was a machine translation. Like, it's messy. It's not great. So
yeah, I saw a screenshot that was like, medical doctor? Yes, that's a doctor who studies medicine or something. Yeah. Just really like, what?
Yeah, so
I'll take this man are sick over that.
Basically, a lot of gamers complained pretty loudly, and so now, you know, the Nipponichi Software America president, Takuro Yamashita-san, has stated that, you know, they're going to go back, they're going to get a new team to go over the game, to relocalize, retranslate, and maybe even update voice work to reflect these changes. So they are taking this very seriously. While I'm a little bit, like, upset that this got through the cracks in the first place, I will say they're taking ownership, they're taking care of it, and I think that's really great. Supposedly, the fixes will be implemented in a patch by the end of November, so keep looking forward.
Yeah, they must be working overtime there. We have details about the new Sonic comic launching with IDW, the publisher. At New York Comic Con 2017, they announced that the new Sonic comic series will begin in April 2018. Hopefully it takes more from the spirit of Sonic Mania rather than Sonic Forces. Although, you know, the Sonic comics had a very, very, very devoted fan base. I guess Sonic in general has a devoted fan base. That's why Sonic Forces is a thing.
Yeah. We also had the most recent N7 Day. This is, of course, annual celebration of the Mass Effect series that takes place each year on November 7th. This year was a big one because Mass Effect 1 released originally on November 20th, 2007. So this was kind of like the 10-year anniversary. Unfortunately, it was fucking nothing.gif.
Yeah, it reminded me, do you remember the Full House episode where DJ forgets that it's Kimmy's birthday, and so they have to throw together a last-minute party, and they're like, we made you a cake out of frozen hash browns. She's like, oh, DJ, how sweet. You made a cake out of my favorite breakfast food item. And then Steve had given her some flowers that said, I love you, Sugar Lips. And then Kimmy was like, what's Sugar Lips? She's like, remember that one time when we were kids and you had powdered sugar all over your lips? I never told you, but I always meant to call you Sugar Lips.
I'm not quite sure why you just told that anecdote, but you said more about Full House than EA said about BioWare and Mass Effect, so I'll accept it. Yeah, it was a bit of a bummer this year. I'm still really upset. We did get word, you know, not at N7 Day, but we did get word previously that the single-player DLC that had been planned for Andromeda that we will never be getting now is being adapted to a novel that will be out in June. This is Mass Effect Annihilation, and it is something to look forward to?
Question mark.
We also have word here that Nintendo shut down the Miiverse last week. This is, of course, kind of a big deal. Miiverse, for many of us, was, I think, one of the biggest biggest things that Nintendo got right with the Wii U. It was, of course, the very interactive social community for the Wii U player base to sort of share, like, screenshots and hand-drawn, like, art pieces. Definitely sucks that it's been shut down, but there were some cool stuff. Nintendo did allow everyone to download all of their drawings and posts if you had, like, requested an archive or whatever. I think that's really cool. You know, a lot of people were posting socially just like, hey, thanks for all the good memories. Goodbye. Take care. You know, meet me on Twitter or whatever. That stuff is cool. I just, I really hope Miiverse isn't gone for good. I think that there was tremendous opportunity in Miiverse. And while I appreciate Nintendo pushing people toward Twitter for their Switch game shares, you know, certainly that has gone well for me. It just, there was something special about Miiverse, and I'm not quite ready to say goodbye.
Was it the random penises?
Isn't it always?
Yeah, Miiverse was special. It's sad to see it go by the wayside, but I mean, at least things like Splatoon 2 have kind of like paid homage to that. And you know, even you have like the photo mode in Odyssey kind of like to share things. It's just, it was an interesting, unique way to build community. So something a little different than the other sorts of things we usually report is that the video game voice actor strike is finally over. This has been a little over a year long, which is actually apparently the longest running actor strike in U.S. history, which I didn't realize that. Basically, you know, if you weren't familiar with this, video game voice actors weren't being paid residuals and royalties like regular actors do. And also just doing specifically video game voice work sometimes has you doing hours on end of things like shouting, you know, so they can get different takes of, huh, da-da-da-da-da-da, if it's a Dragon Ball game, I guess. you know, that being said, you know, the voice actors went on strike, and apparently they've reached a new deal, so.
Excellent,
that's
yeah.
That's great. I know unions and such are very controversial, but I am a big fan of them. I'm a big fan of having workers being protected.
On this show, dude, I don't think you have to apologize for all of that. So we have our last piece of culture club here, and this is something that could theoretically change how people view GameStop. This is the new...
They're closing down forever.
This is the new GameStop Power Pass. This is a new program which will cost $60 to participate in, and then for 6 months, you can basically rent out as many pre-owned games you want, one at a time. You'll be able to go to GameStop, basically rent any game from their pre-owned library, play it for as long as you want, then swap it out for another one once you're done with it. There's no limit on the number of swaps you can do throughout the 6 month period, but when the 6 month period is up, you'll be able to keep whatever game you want that you had played. So a lot of people looking at this is like, hey, I'm finally going to be able to play more games than I do now. This is great. I think that's pretty cool. What do you think about this one, Slaggy?
It's interesting. I mean, I doubt I will participate in it, but, you know, I think it has a lot of potential, actually. And, you know, people might be more tempted to do something like that instead of, like, the days of Gamefly. Is Gamefly still a thing?
Yeah.
Do you still have a membership?
I do.
Haven't you had, like, the same game since, like, 2011?
That's not really something we have to talk about now.
My point being, being able to go to your local GameStop may be more convenient than, you know, doing things by mail, which is, like, who uses mail anymore?
All right. Well, we do have one smash hit this week. Smash hit, of course, is where we find a piece of games journalism that we feel is so good that it's worth checking out. I'm picking this week's smash hit for two reasons. First, it is a fantastic deep dive into the collapse of a game and studio. And number two, because it directly links to one of the pieces of news that we're going to deeper dive for our discussion this week. This is, of course, the Kotaku article, The Collapse of Visceral's Ambitious Star Wars Game. This was written by Jason Schreier, and it is basically about the Star Wars game that was being developed at Electronic Arts by Visceral Studios, who has now been closed. The game was, of course, being headed up by Amy Hennig. A lot of us know her for her work on some of the older Crystal Dynamics games, particularly the Soul Reaver games, you know, the Legacy of Kain spinoff subseries. This Star Wars game was supposed to be like a Star Wars take on Uncharted, but unfortunately, due to being hamstrung by budget budget issues, Visceral Games was not able to pull the game together, and as a result of that mismanagement, quite a few people are out of their jobs. The story really is a fantastic read, even though it's about something that's very sad. I strongly recommend everybody check this article out. I think it's a really good one. Very well written and well researched.
Yeah, it's definitely a sad. I think a lot of us were looking forward to what Amy Hennig would be able to do with this, and it's just, you know, just another example of why, remember how EA always, it seems to always get, like, the worst company in America award? Yeah.
Yep.
EA sucks.
Hey, you know, when you're pumping out the hits, EA is great. As soon as you have one or two games that don't quite perform to expectation, start looking for a new job.
Even Square Enix has gotten better about that.
Right? Oh, man. All right, so let's jump right in then to our discussion. We're going to deep dive a couple of news stories here. I picked out maybe four or five news stories that I think are really worth following up that really happened while we were sort of on our unintentional hiatus as I dealt with my medical issues. The first one, of course, are the recent slate of studio closures. This, of course, includes Motiga, who was the studio behind Gigantic, which was, of course, the actually pretty well-loved hero shooter.
Yeah.
Also, Runic Games was shut down. They're the studio behind the very popular action RPG series Torchlight, as well as the recently released puzzle platformer Hob. We also heard that EVE developer CCP shut down two of their studios and will no longer be making VR games. We got word, of course, of EA shutting down Visceral Games, and Telltale Games laid off a full 25% of their workforce. So that's just in the last month. And, you know, we've been sort of talking about this time after time in the last few years, but basically it seems that at the moment, the games industry is not entirely sustainable. Jason Shearer himself has really been posting quite often recently on Twitter about, you know, the games industry seems unsustainable. A lot of the diehard gamers are getting super mad about it. And of course, a lot of even the more reasoned gamers are talking about, well, this only seems like AAA games. It doesn't affect every kind of studio. I just don't know that that's a distinction that's entirely meaningful to make. Slaggy, I'd like to hear from you. You know, we've been doing this show for 5 years now, pretty regularly. We've done 150 episodes. We have talked about so many studios closing. How do you feel about the health of the industry at this point?
It's weird because, like, you look at Nintendo doing so well. So I would say, like, you know, like, for Nintendo, like, they're doing really well. But I guess maybe, you know, we see, like, in Japan, we see a lot of, like, these mobile games closing down. But I don't know, maybe, like, in Japan, the industry is doing pretty well. But elsewhere, it seems like it's really kind of struggling.
Well, and that is an interesting thing that you point out there, because all of those studios that we just were talking about are Western studios. And it is interesting to wonder, you know, are the Japanese side of things, which I think maybe saw more closures earlier on, but have recently been doing a lot better, are they a little bit better positioned now?
Sorry, say that again?
Are the Japanese studios and Asian studios now a little bit better positioned to take advantage of the current marketplace?
I think so. I mean, I think that a lot of them, I mean, maybe not Capcom as much, but, you know, I think like Nintendo is definitely, I mean, look at the Wii U. I mean, so Nintendo definitely had its rough spot. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting.
Although, let's be clear, Nintendo went through this rough spot without closing down studios left and right.
That's true. Yeah, and I apologize. I got distracted because with, like, the article right under the one that we were talking about was Toyarks.
You're talking about the Hot Ryu figure.
Yes, I'm talking about the Hot Ryu figure.
All right, well, focus.
But yeah, it's just really sad. I mean, I think it affects us more as gamers when it's something that we, like Torchlight, that, you know, before Diablo 3 hit, like, we really thought that Torchlight was going to be
the Diablo successor.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, you know, our hearts and thoughts go out to everyone at these studios who was impacted. In the interest of full disclosure, I do personally know people who are impacted by some of these layoffs this go around. It just really sucks, you know, because especially in, you know, in some of these cases, EA in particular, you know, Visceral Games was mismanaged. Their earlier games, like the Dead Space games, those are still games that each sold, you know, 4 or 5 million units. But because the studio was so mismanaged by EA, they still ended up down the shitter. And that just is, it's really unfair. And for those of us who love that franchise, you know, we're probably not really going to ever see anything meaningful done with it again. It's just, no one wins in these scenarios, except maybe some assholes at the top of the chain who are still going to get their annual, you know, $64 million bonus or whatever. So it just sucks. It just really sucks. Well, in happier news, let's talk a little bit about Nintendo's success. You know, the Switch is still hugely successful worldwide. You know, this is a story we've been following since this March when the Switch released. Of course, it sold out all of its initial shipment. And then, surprisingly to many, continued to sell out every shipment thereafter, especially in Japan, where, you know, some stores would get allocations of 20 units and have 400 or 500 people in line outside waiting to enter lotteries to try and buy one of those.
Which we definitely specifically talked about on air.
So it's worth noting, you know, with the release of the company's last earnings report, Nintendo has now updated the estimates for the current fiscal year to 14 million units.
No big deal. That's just more than the Switch sold in its entire lifetime.
And if we include the month of March from 2017, which, you know, the current fiscal year launched April 1, so the units sold in that launch month aren't included in that would put the year one sales number for the Switch at 16.74 million.
Wow.
Yeah, that is a lot. The wild thing, though, is that the next fiscal year prediction that Nintendo has put forward indicates that they intend on shipping between 25 and 30 million units over the next fiscal.
Wow.
That would, of course, put the shipment total up to 46.74 million, and it's worth noting that would put it ahead or roughly on par with the Nintendo DS and Nintendo Wii in terms of shipping. So this would be a lot. And, you know, it's worth noting basically no other console touches that. Like, we have the DS, we have the Wii, maybe the Game Boy, which was the second best-selling Nintendo console of all time, but we don't actually really have detailed financials on that because numbers weren't really tracked the same back then. But the TLDR here is that Nintendo is telegraphing to their investors and to the market at large that they're anticipating record level demand for the Switch. You know, the PlayStation 4, which is considered to be an extremely successful product, sold 30.2 million units worldwide in that same time frame that we would be talking about. So moving an additional 15 million, that would be a coup for the Switch. I mean, that would be truly remarkable. So I'd like to ask you, Slaggy, what do you think about this news of this? Like, how do you read that?
I mean, it really, for me, just goes to show that Nintendo did it right this time. The messaging was clear about what the Switch was designed to do. The third-party and first-party support is solid. And just, like, all the things that we were saying that, like, were looked to be signs of success for the Switch are proving to be true. And, I mean, I know so many people who have gotten on board. I think I probably know more people with a Switch than without a Switch, honestly.
Yeah, among my gamer friends, I think that's true for me too at the moment. I can think of one couple that I know that don't have one. They bought Breath of the Wild on Wii U rather than Switch because, you know, they didn't think it would be worth buying a whole new console. And even them now, with the recent release of Mario Odyssey, I was right at their place drinking beers a few nights ago, and they were talking about how for Christmas they plan on getting each other a Switch so that they can finally play Mario Odyssey.
Yeah, definitely. I have a friend who had picked up Breath of the Wild on Wii U as well, and this is someone who's a huge Zelda fan, but finally for Odyssey was like, you know, I've got to get a Switch. So I mean, it just proves that, you know, games like Breath of the Wild and Odyssey will sell consoles.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course, this is still Nintendo's estimates. Technically speaking, it isn't necessarily proof of anything other than they believe they can sell a record number of units. The wild thing is, Nintendo is actually a notoriously conservative company with regard to their unit production. we have talked about in the past how they kind of didn't produce enough Switches, that they have acknowledged that they should have produced more Switches, but they were being very conservative after the
right.
Wii U.
I mean, Switches were hard to find for a while.
And we actually, yeah, I mean, we know, obviously, there are always conspiracy theorists who think Nintendo's running a game.
Well, despite with the NES and SNES classics, too.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. Despite the fact that if you look at the logistics of mass production of these devices and the timetables on which they were being produced and when the Switches were being produced and kind of the worldwide NAND memory
shortage,
exactly, thank you, that the hardware manufacturer industry was facing during the production schedules of these devices, I mean, literally all signs point to this having been just a shit situation for Nintendo. And they are, again, typically an extremely conservative company with regard to these production orders. So if they really believe they're going to sell 30 million units in the next fiscal, that would show tremendous faith in their product and, to me, tremendous faith in their software lineup moving forward.
I mean,
I've heard a lot of recently is that, you know, we had a slam-packed software lineup in 2017, and it's still coming. We still have one more A-tier Nintendo game coming next month, Xenoblade Chronicles 2. So it's kind of a big deal. You know, we don't even really know what's coming from Nintendo in 2018. A lot of people feel like the wad has been blown, so to speak. But, you know we have more Fire Emblem coming, a full Fire Emblem game. We have, which is, again, you know, Fire Emblem is now a guaranteed multi-million seller. So it is a big deal. You know, the Yoshi games are going to sell a million. The other game you just mentioned, Kirby, that's definitely going to sell a million. So,
and
I mean,
if they actually do get Pokemon for Switch out, like next November, that's gonna be a 4 or 5 million seller probably.
Yeah, I mean, and those Pokemon games, I mean, they typically in their lifetime sales do more like 13 or 14 million.
Oh, I just mean like launch, so, at launch.
I mean, I don't know if it'll sell that much at launch, but I could see it moving 2 million at launch pretty easily. Regardless. Pokemon remains a big question mark, but the entire year, other than the first month or two, remain a giant question mark. To me, though, seeing this sales prediction for the next year out of Nintendo, seeing this unit production out of the next year from Nintendo, tells me I don't think we're done seeing a cavalcade of quality software.
Smash.
They must have more tricks up their sleeves, because you're not going to sell 30 million units on Fire Emblem and Yoshi. And I love Fire Emblem and Yoshi, but that's just not, you need something more. And I'm really wondering what that's going to be. I'm kind of wondering if we're not going to get a surprise Mario Kart sequel or a new Super Mario Brothers game, something that moves units.
Yeah.
And to go with this, you know, we actually have word of some third parties sort of taking two different stances. One, of course, is Bandai Namco, who confirmed earlier this week that Dragon Ball Xenoverse 2 for Nintendo Switch worldwide has already sold more than 400,000 units.
That's awesome.
For a pretty quick and cheap port of a PS4 game, that's a phenomenal, phenomenal result. On the flip side of that, we have EA, who recently released FIFA 18 on the Switch, basically saying that after FIFA's sales, which I guess were not entirely impressive, I guess 1% of all FIFA 18 sales were Switch sales, but it needs to be mentioned, we're talking about a series that is already done, what, like 4 or 5 million units? So,
yeah,
we're still talking about a pretty high number of sales.
Can I just talk about EA for a minute?
But basically, EA is deciding that they are going to, quote-unquote, wait and see until they finally fully understand what the demand is for the Switch.
Oh, they are so out of touch. Like,
say your piece on EA.
Like, do they really think that the type of games that I would say most Switch players are looking to play are FIFA titles? Like, I'm sorry, like, if they had said, happy N7 day, surprise, we didn't tell you this, but you can now download Mass Effect Trilogy on your Switch. Like,
the funny thing is, it wouldn't have even had to be Trilogy. They could have done a $25 port of Mass Effect 1, and people would have paid $25 just to play that on their Switch. I guarantee you, they could have released Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3 as individual titles, not even including all their DLC, and people would still have eaten it up.
Like, EA is just so out of touch.
Yeah, well, you know, EA is pretty much going for only AAA blockbusters, and it looks like nothing else is anything they're really interested in pursuing. With regard to FIFA, my understanding of the FIFA contract is that they have to release at least one FIFA game on every hardware platform.
Wow.
So that's almost certainly why they released FIFA 18 when they did, and now they're going to use that as their shitty, oh, we're testing to see how our platform or how our titles do on this platform. But real talk, EA is simply a company interested in making the most money. They have no interest in that middle tier money, and they will actively piss and shit on their studios if they are delivering those middle tier sales. Again, we saw that with Visceral.
Konami of the West.
I wouldn't disagree with you. In interesting other news, though, we do have a lot of word about other third parties jumping on the Switch. This has actually been particularly a big deal with some of the Japanese studios, and that's what we're going to focus on here. Basically, you know, we got some word out of Capcom back in early October, got completely lambasted online because they basically said, you know, we basically haven't had enough time to make Nintendo Switch games, and that's not why we're not really present on the Switch yet, but we're looking forward to what we can do in the coming year. Of course, this is a little bit bullshit. We actually know that Nintendo consulted with Capcom on the hardware of the Switch. It's specifically due to Capcom for Monster Hunter asking for more RAM in the Switch that the Switch has the number of RAM that it has.
Wow.
That's a fact. We know that. That is real.
And yet they're not bringing that one Monster Hunter over.
Well,
Double
that...
Cross, was it?
Are you serious? Monster Hunter Double Cross is out in Japan on Switch. It will probably never come to North America because they're releasing Monster Hunter World on PS4. There's a lot of speculation that has been rampant and wild for months before Monster Hunter World was ever even revealed, that basically the next Monster Hunter game was going to be on PS4, basically every console but Nintendo, due to the specific deal that was struck for co-funding for Monster Hunter World. I kind of believe in that because, again, it's just so weird that this rumor was going around for probably 6 months before Monster Hunter World was announced. And then when it was announced, it basically met every word of the rumor, which, again, I'm a big fan of. We've talked about this in the past. A lot of rumors are clearly just gossip or made up fakeness. But every now and then you see that sort of a hint of truth, the sort of where there's smoke, there's fire principle. When you hear word of a game that is right detail for detail 6 months in advance, that tends to have turned out to have been a real leak. You don't typically guess these things just right that far in advance. Either way, though, we do have word Capcom plans on releasing multiple new Nintendo Switch games in fiscal year 2018, and they have confirmed that at least one of them is going to be belonging to the well-loved Ace Attorney series.
That's cool.
So that is very exciting. Of course, we don't know if it'll be a new title or a remake or a remaster, but Ace Attorney is Ace Attorney.
Are Phoenix Wright and Apollo Justice going to kiss in it? That's what I want to know.
Fingers crossed. We also, of course, have word that Marvelous Entertainment is going to be releasing multiple Switch games moving forward. They are planning both brand new title developments as well as ports of older titles to Switch.
That sounds great.
I will say, you know, Marvelous obviously has been involved in the No More Heroes games previously. We know Travis Strikes Again No More Heroes is coming to the Switch. I think they'd be missing a great opportunity if they didn't look at some No More Heroes ports.
Oh, yeah.
We also have word, of course, that Square Enix is planning on aggressively pursuing the Nintendo Switch, particularly because it appears to them to be the ideal platform for middle-range games. Basically, those mid-tier games that I think a lot of us have really lamented not having in the marketplace right now, you know, sort of things that aren't quite indie, but, you know, they also aren't AAA. Games like the Power Stones of the world, the Demon's Crests of the world. Psychic, you have to love some middle-tier games. What are some middle-tier games you love? Bayonetta would probably count as a middle-tier game.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm trying to think of what, in terms of Square Enix, would be like a middle-tier...
Soul Reaver. They own Legacy of Kain now.
That's true. I was trying to, I was thinking more of like
Seiken Densetsu.
Yeah, like that's what I was trying to think. Like Seiken Densetsu seems like a likely one.
Romancing Saga.
Yeah, the Saga games.
The Bouncer.
You really think they're gonna make a new Bouncer game?
Well, they very specifically said they will not be ruling out any IPs. They're new IPs, they're currently active IPs, they're currently inactive IPs. They state here very clearly they will not rule out any of them for Nintendo Switch development. They think that because it is such a good platform for these middle-range games, that it represents a tremendous opportunity for them. And some of the other platforms will probably also get versions of these games, but they will be being developed with the Switch as the lead platform. Particularly, they think that the positioning is unique versus the PS4, Xbox One. They are already doing very well on the 3DS and the Nintendo Switch, and they see the Nintendo Switch's momentum as very strong and not in danger of fading out. So, yeah, I think the sky's the limit, kinda.
So what you're saying is you think that we're gonna see Tobal 3.
I would be so down, but I mean, realistically, I think this just means we're going to get a bunch of Final Fantasy spinoffs, but I mean, I would give anything for a new My Life as a King game, so that's all right for me.
Imagine if they get Akira Toriyama on board to do Tobal 3, and he's like, I had such a pleasant experience working with Square Enix again that we're making a new Chrono game.
See, why you gotta make fun of me for my optimistic speculation? Look, real talk, Square Enix, super happy with the Nintendo Switch. Very aggressively working on new titles for the platform. I think that's good for everybody.
I agree.
And last but not least on this news point, we have word coming out of Namco Bandai. I'm sorry, Bandai Namco did it once again.
Wow, 5 years later, still.
Right? Basically that they have, multiple Switch games that are already out, doing super well. Like, they didn't think that the Switch would be accepted this fast, and now they're leaping to catch up. But they already have three big Switch exclusive titles to announce in the coming spring and summer months of 2018. So please look forward to it. Overall, it looks like the Switch is in a really good place. You know, we were talking about how Nintendo must have a lot of confidence in the upcoming year's lineup. It's interesting to think that that will include both their first party games and third party games for the first time in a really long time on a Nintendo platform. Before we move on to the next news story, Slaggy, did you have anything else to add?
Not really.
All right. Another big gaming news story that happened while we were away is that my own beloved NeoGAF underwent a little bit of a dark-sided sea change.
Really? Because I would have said it as a shitstorm.
So, unfortunately, the founder of GAF, Tyler Malka, probably better known to most of you as Evil Lore, was accused as a part of the millions-strong hashtag MeToo phenomenon that he basically sexually assaulted one of his friends. She, of course, made these allegations. She had not meant for them to go public, but once people figured out who she was talking about, they sort of blew it up. And, of course, the gaming community at GAF, I've always found personally to be a very progressive one that I was always very proud to be a part of. We all basically cut and run. NeoGAF has since then transformed a little bit into, I guess, a little bit of a shit show. It's a little bit more accepting of the current conservative ideologies than it was previously. Just kind of sad, but the good thing is that sort of from the ashes, not entirely dissimilar to a phoenix, a new forum has already arisen. This one is called Reset Era or Resetera. Of course, Resetera was like many game forums. You know, a lot of people were just kind of like, anyone can make a forum. It's not that big of a deal. Why it is a big deal is within that first week, they had already had tens of thousands of users. Basically, the entire old GAF community, more or less, has risen up and moved over to Resetera. It is now being set up as an LLC, a limited liability corporation. Yeah. And, you know, basically, no one single person is going to be in charge of the site, so they're really hopeful that they can prevent the same kind of thing happening there as happened on GAF.
Let's hope.
You know, a lot of the mods that had been working on GAF did move over. A lot of sort of famous games personalities have been involved in Resetera. And so far, it's been a really fantastic place to discuss games. So I've been really excited about this change and really happy. I never really thought I could have left GAF and been happy about it, but then that happened.
Well, and I mean, even with, you said, you know, overall the positive player base, GAF kind of had a very elitist sort of perspective to outsiders a lot of times, so maybe this change is good for the community.
Maybe. Let's see. We also have word here. We had the release of the Xbox One X. This is, of course, numbers as of just this week, because this happened just in the last week, but GameStop has confirmed that they have sold nearly their entire Xbox One X allocation in the first 24 hours of release. Basically, it's already a little bit difficult to get a hold of this $500 console upgrade. But the flip side is that, you know, this has turned out to get, it's turned out to get really fantastic reviews, both critically and from users. It's basically like having an extremely powerful PC for $500 with an HD Blu-ray player, you know, the 4K Blu-ray, which on their own cost a few hundred dollars. So a lot of people feel like there's a real value proposition here. I will note, you know, some of the backwards compatibility games running on it look phenomenal. Basically, you're able to play these games on your Xbox One, but if you play them on your Xbox One X, basically they're going to get kicked up to like 4K resolution. They get all kinds of fancy anti-aliasing, post-process applications applied. In particular, Ninja Gaiden Black, in 4K with all this post-processing, it just looks incredibly clean. Like, it is a ridiculously clean-looking game. It's just overall, like, really exciting to see backwards compatibility being put in the forefront of this console. It's really exciting to see, for me, you know, a lot of these games that on the Xbox, even older games, Halo 5, for example, that had sort of the variable resolutions that were, you know, would basically scale down when too much was happening on screen. Now, when you play them on the Xbox One X, they scale up just as well, and so we're seeing these older games already running at, you know, 4K resolution, with beautiful picture quality. Halo 5, Gears of War 4, like, both look like next-gen experiences in 2017. Like, they look far better than anything else I've ever seen in the console space.
Yeah, I have to say that it looks like Microsoft really did it right with this. And, you know, we were kind of skeptical. We're like, oh, you know, this is like, are people gonna buy this? Is this the right move? But it sounds like, honestly, this might have been a better move than the PS4 Pro.
Yeah, well, you know, there was a lot of derisive comments being made about these games with the adaptive resolutions that are, you know, variable when these games released, but now we're seeing sort of the long play here. If the Microsoft strategy is going to be, you know, all of these Xbox One games will be forward compatible with all Xboxes moving forward, we're already seeing how good of a thing that's going to be for the quality of the games, for obviously keeping all of our games collections playable. And I have to be honest, you know, Xbox One X for me was a laughable preposition, and now I'm looking like, how can I buy one of these right now?
I'm like, you have until next weekend to figure out so that we can play Xbox One X.
Right? And it's even as simple as, like, looking at these video comparisons. Kotaku posted a good one of Star Wars Battlefront 2 on an Xbox One and a One X, where, like, you can really tell the difference that just the higher resolution and the higher resolution textures make. It just looks like a much better game. Like, it looks like you're watching live action footage being filmed. It's ridiculous. Slaggy, did you see any of this Battlefront 2 stuff?
Yeah, it's crazy, and it just makes me kind of wish that, it's weird because, like, I don't really have a lot of desire to play on my Xbox One, but now, like, if I was able to realistically get an Xbox One X, that's where I would go over PS4, because, I mean, like, just that box looks like it's really a great piece of hardware.
Yeah, for the last year, I've been buying all my multiplats on PS4, but I kind of think starting in the next month or so, I'm going to start buying multi-platform games on the Xbox One, because I'm going to eventually get a One X, if nothing else.
I bet Assassin's Creed Origins would probably stay on the One X.
Dude, I like Assassin's Creed a lot, and with that year off that we all had to take, I'm ready for a new Assassin's Creed game. I do have a PS4 Pro, but I kind of want to buy it on Xbox One for when I get an X. This sucks.
Get one now.
All right. Well, the last news story we're going to talk about, and this one is a little sillier. Jeremy Parrish did a guest article over at Polygon ranking what he called the core Super Mario games. And in this game, he ranked all 18 of them. This is kind of interesting because his list is not entirely similar to what my own list would be, probably different from what I think Slaggy's list would be. And interestingly, SB Nation, which is ostensibly a sports blog, you know, this article, this post was so contentious online that even sites like SB Nation were posting their own best of Mario lists.
And SB Nation and Polygon are sister sites.
Yes, well, I mean, that's not necessarily a huge talking point, but
the fact that a sister site, it would be like Kotaku and Jezebel calling each other out or something back in the day. Anyway.
So, basically, we're seeing all these people on Twitter coming for Jeremy Parrish over what his number one pick was. We have, obviously, here in studio, us disagreeing with this list. Let's just go down the list real quick. Slaggy, do you want to go down the top 17 or top 18 core Mario games according to Jeremy Parrish?
Sure, starting with the lowest.
Starting with the highest. Starting with 18.
Yeah, so the lowest, number 18 is Lost Levels. 17, New Super Mario Brothers for DS. 16 is Sunshine. 15, Super Mario Land for Game Boy. 14, New Super Mario Brothers 2 for 3DS. 13, I'm having trouble keeping track here.
Forgot your numbers.
Super Mario Brothers 2, Doki Doki Panic. 12, Super Mario Land 2, 6 Golden Coins. 11, Super Mario 64. 10, New Super Mario Brothers Wii. 9, Super Mario 3D Land. 8, Super Mario Brothers. 7, Super Mario Galaxy. 6, Super Mario World. 5, Super Mario 3D World. 4, Super Mario Galaxy 2. 3, Super Mario Odyssey. 2, Super Mario Brothers 3. And his number one title is New Super Mario Brothers U.
Now, first of all, how are you gonna not include Super Mario Land 2 higher? Like, that's a great game. How are you gonna put that at 12? I fundamentally disagree, but I just disagree with a lot of this. I think you do too, Slaggy. So what I asked you to do before we recorded was put together a list of maybe like your Mario top 5. Did you do that for me?
I kind of did, but it's so hard, honestly, because like when we talked about our Mario month, you know, for Mario's anniversary, like all of these games have, whether it's been the 2D Marios or the 3D Marios, have done something to push the series forward. So, I mean, it's kind of hard to necessarily rank them 1 through 5, but, you know, for me, Super Mario Brothers 3 is always pretty up there, but it's hard for me to think if that's because of game design or just my personal love for it. But I mean, I feel like Mario Brothers 3, definitely was the pinnacle of what they were doing on NES. Super Mario Odyssey would definitely be up there, as we'll talk about it when we do a focus episode. I think it's just fantastic. Of course, you have to mention Super Mario World. I mean, that was really groundbreaking. For me, I think Super Mario Brothers 2 is a fantastic game, and I'm surprised that it was so close to the bottom. The only one I really agree with really is like him putting Lost Levels last. I think that Lost Levels, he does make a good point about how it's kind of in complete opposition to what we expect from Nintendo for good game design.
Oh, absolutely.
About like, oh, here's a poison mushroom. Oh, if you don't time your jump just right when this gust blows, this level's impossible to beat. One of the big ones for me is Sunshine. The fact that Sunshine was rated so low.
Yeah, I still don't really get the hate for Sunshine. I probably never will. On my own list, though, number 5 would probably be New Mario Brothers U. I actually do agree with him that New Mario Brothers U is super underrated. I wouldn't call it the best one, but it is very underrated in my opinion. I'd probably go with number 4 would be 64, number 3 would be 3D World, number 2 would be Super Mario World, and then number 1 would be Mario Galaxy. And I don't feel comfortable including Odyssey yet in this ranking because I haven't finished it. Like, I finished the core story, but I haven't done, like, 100% of the game, and it just seems inappropriate for me to include it, like, so soon. And that also kind of irks me about this article is, giving Mario Odyssey number 3 on this list is, like, I just don't get it. Like, you just played this game, like, in the last month. Like, you don't have any idea how that experience is going to age.
Yeah, and he ranked 64, kind of low, because it hasn't aged well, right?
You know, he did, except I think it's aged really well. I still really have fun playing it. I just replayed it like a year ago.
The only thing that hasn't aged well with 64 is the camera.
Yeah, right? And even for me, like, it's not that big of a problem.
And it's interesting, because I think the person whose list is most similar to how I would probably rank it over on SB Nation is Grant Brisby. I don't really know much about Grant Brisby or what he does, but his top five are: number one is 64, 2 World, 3 4 Odyssey, 5 Sunshine. So it's really interesting to see just what people's opinions are. We'd love to hear your
Mario top five. Tweet at us over at gamebuoy.org with the .org spelled out, .org. Yeah, see, saying it at the same time doesn't work on this program, Slaggy. That only works on Stab, because here you're then supposed to say it after I say it.
Gamebuoy.org, we're going to do the shout outs in a few minutes anyway. I'll do it then.
All right. Closing thoughts. I don't think I have too many on this. That ranking thing was super fun.
Yay, Switch. Boo, EA. Pouring out a 40 for closed studios.
All right. Well, then let's start winding down by talking about what's up.
I said, hey, what's going on?
All right, well, while we were on hiatus, I primarily played Fire Emblem Warriors. Fire Emblem Warriors, of course, is the Fire Emblem Musou game. I really enjoyed it. Super fun. Definitely something I'm going to go back to soon. But unfortunately, Nintendo released it literally a week before Mario Odyssey, yeah, which is like the most unfair thing to do to any game ever.
Seriously.
I really enjoyed it, though. I love Fire Emblem, and it's been really cool to see those characters with, like, you know, high quality assets rendered in HD.
High quality ass.
And, you know, the script is, in my opinion, really fun and well written. So it's been a fun experience. Mario Odyssey, of course, is a masterwork game. I think our next episode will probably be a spotlight on Mario Odyssey. I have completed the story not too deep into the post game, of which there is a lot, surprisingly.
Yeah.
But I'm just overall incredibly happy. I think Mario Odyssey hit every note it needed to hit. It's an absolute love letter to 3D game design and an absolute
joy.
Success on every possible level.
And
so
enjoy.
It's just a really phenomenally designed game. I've also been spending a lot of time on Steam playing Dead by Daylight. This is a asynchronous online multiplayer game. Four players play like horror movie survivors, and then one plays like a horror movie villain. And basically the four are trying to outsmart the one, while the one has way more abilities and ways to kill you. You're trying to outsmart them and escape.
So
it's a lot of fun.
The non-jank
version. All of like $20, so it's cool.
It's a non-jank version of the Friday the 13th game.
You know, the Friday the 13th game isn't that jank at this point.
It just looks jank.
But I do find Dead by Daylight a little more fun. It's a little less complex, so I think that it's a little easier to play and a little easier for everyone to, like, play right, which definitely helps. I felt like in Friday the 13th, if people didn't know what they were doing, you were gonna die. In Dead by Daylight, you can make up for, like, a weak teammate or two if you know what you're doing.
Cool.
And I think that's important for the sake of balance. What about you, Slaggy? What have you been playing?
I've been playing a little bit here and there in Final Fantasy 14. Nothing huge. I did, you know, go through the new story content. Not any of the raids or anything, but the new story content was really good. Trying to work on a couple new jobs and such. But really, the big focus for me has been Super Mario Odyssey. Just a delight of a game. Probably my favorite of the 3D Marios so far. And I'll elaborate more on that when we focus on it, but it's just been a complete delight, and I'm really thrilled that, there's plenty more to discover, so I'm really, really happy with that, and it just hit, like you said, it hit every note that it needed to.
Excellent, excellent. All right, do we have any social links this week?
So, going back a couple weeks, we have Gym Leader Derek over on Twitter saying, the most recent GameBuoy.org podcast is so good, new favorite. I totally looked up that Echo level, serious nightmare fuel, and then tagged us with a little heart emoji.
Thank you, we heart you too.
We super do. We also have Gym Leader Derek also tagging a Twitter user about how to get Japanese or other regions eShop stuff on the Switch, and recommended that this Twitter user check out the podcast that we did on it. So thank you again for that. Other than that, you know, as we haven't been around quite as much, there hasn't been as much going on in the Twitterverse, but, you know, we're really excited to be bringing you more content. Captain Spike, I'm really glad that things seem to be going really well for you, and, you know, while I've definitely missed doing this, I've also been, you know, very understanding of, you know, of the need for a break. So, that being said, please reach out to us, even if it's not about what we discussed on the air. If you want to tell us what you're playing, we just love interacting with you. Otherwise, we would be putting this up for, like, randomly, like, or, like, literally no one. So, it's all for you. And, you can do that by tweeting us at @gamebuoy.org with the .org spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
At gamebuoy.org with the .org spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
Facebook is also a thing. We're at facebook.com/gamebuoy. But, you know, Facebook is not as necessarily easy to, like, just say, like, hey, what's up? This is what we're doing. But you could also mail MailBuoy at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
MailBuoy@gamebuoy.org.
And MailBuoy is always super thrilled. Its day is just made when it receives an email from you, and it's just always excited to let us know when you have sent email.
Sure is.
And you can check us out over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And you should also check out some other podcasts.
I ask y'all to check out the Voice of Geeks Network over at VogNetwork.com, where you can hear such shows as ourselves, Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female's perspective on the world's most popular MMO, Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom we steal so many of our cues, the Ranger Pridecast, where myself and Shane Alenko talk about the current season of the Power Rangers meta series, as well as the current season of the Super Sentai meta series, upon which it's based out of Japan. That show has been on hiatus, much like Game Buoy and Anime Buoy and Stabcast, for much the same reasons, but will be coming back soon once Shane's current vacation is over.
Possibly with a Power Ranger or Super Sentai husband.
Fingers crossed. I hope for him. You can also check out the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. In terms of shows that aren't on VOG, I plead that you check out the Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, X Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants, the Astral Era podcast. Astral Era is a Final Fantasy XIV podcast focused on in-depth discussion of new content, game mechanics, story slash lore, music, and of course, glamour, darling.
Yes,
you should also check out the Reading is Fundamental podcast, where Slagkick calls the shots and features myself, Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, and Delvin from VG Realness talking about the current season of RuPaul's Drag Race. I believe we will have a origin episode coming up for the upcoming season, so please look forward to it. Yeah, Slaggy, Paul, take us a place.
I'm going to take you to a VG Realness, which serves up a dose of video game chit-chat among friends. Of course, I'd be remiss to not mention Game Bar, the gay video game Prairie Home Companion, and a part of the Hunty Bunch. I'd also like to shout out to the Magical Boys podcast, formerly known as the Joystick Jockeys. But now, instead of just a video game podcast, they are a pop culture podcast from a queer perspective. I'd like to shout out to our allies over at the Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk. I'd also like to direct you to our sister shows, Anime Buoy, your port of call for anime recommendations, news bits, and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be, and the Same Type Attack Bonus podcast, or Stabcast for short, your twice monthly look into the deeper worlds of Pokemon that's Spike and I do with Trainer Salter. Also, our wonderful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated, the project that aimed to reorchestrate beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. They unfortunately have closed their doors quite a while back at this point, but we will always be pouring out a 40 into the great fairy fountain. Insert fairy cackle. Oh no, that just sounds like Buried Alive Spider-Man Elsa Hulk.
Okay. All right. With all of that having been said, it has been a lovely Sunday evening, but it is regrettably, lamentably, time to end the show. Thank you so much for spending your time with us this lovely day. I hope you've had half as much fun listening as we've had talking. We'll be back at you hopefully next week, and if not, then definitely the week after. Probably doing a deep dive on Super Mario Odyssey. But until then, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
And, you know, let's go classic. See you, Space Cowboy.
Yeah.
All right.